And welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is October 24th, 2019. We have four matters that are set on our calendar for oral presentation and additional arguments that will be presenting in a non-oral fashion. Council, each of you has 15 minutes to state your case to the appeals panel. Appellant counsel, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. Please introduce yourself and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of when you take your place at the podium. With that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the first case for presentation.
Calling case number A181974, State versus Derek Deshaun Henderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jenna Yauk Erickson. I am an assistant state public defender, and I'm here this morning representing the appellant, Mr. Derek Henderson. Mr. Henderson has raised two issues for this court's consideration, and this morning I'd like to begin with the first. This record is replete with evidence that AR made multiple prior false reports of sexual assault and that she was generally untruthful. On appeal, we challenge the exclusion of three specific false reports. It's helpful at the outset to note the procedural posture of each of those pieces of evidence. The three false reports are, first, that AR alleged a boy at school took her into a bathroom, touched her breasts without her consent, that the school examined video and determined that was false. Second, that AR reported her female babysitter touched her vaginal area without her consent, that that report was also determined to be false, and third, that AR threatened to falsely accuse her father of sexual assault. The second and third, so the babysitter and the dad report, were both excluded by the district court on the grounds that Mr. Henderson had not met the threshold of reasonable probability of falsity. The first, the bathroom incident, is slightly different. In a pretrial order, the judge ruled that Mr. Henderson did meet the standard of reasonable probability of falsity and said, you may elicit that evidence at trial.
But the evidence elicited, I found that the judge in this particular case seemed to be very thorough as far as his in-camera review and review of the evidence. So we have a situation where AR testifies and defense counsel chose not to cross-examine her. That would have been a tactical determination. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I believe it was, Your Honor.
So if you're trying to bring in this testimony through someone that wasn't even there when AR can't even recall this specific instance of conduct, how do you override all of the concerns about hearsay within hearsay and the reliability of that testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. So my answer has several parts. The first is that the district court and the state at trial were quite concerned with this idea of impeachment. That has no bearing on this appeal, and here's why. In Goldenstein, I believe it's page 340.
So it's substantive evidence?
It's substantive evidence. They don't have to impeach AR. They can make that strategic choice because they have another way to get the evidence in. There's no question about that. This court said in a published opinion, evidence of prior false accusations is admissible both to attack the credibility of the complainant and as substantive evidence. They don't have to impeach her. It's irrelevant that they didn't.
So the hearsay rules don't apply then if it's substantive evidence?
No, I don't think that's true. The hearsay rules do apply. They have to comply with the rules of evidence. The only possible hearsay problem is with the bathroom incident, right? Because, again, the other two are excluded at the threshold question. So this court's duty is to determine whether that was wrong. This notion that, as to the bathroom incident specifically, Mr. Henderson would have been eliciting hearsay has several problems. It's premature. He's never allowed to ask these questions. Defense counsel states on the record quite clearly, I am not going to elicit hearsay. I don't have to.
But that doesn't mean that the evidence comes in through any witness. I mean, doesn't the court have to measure its own ruling in terms of how that evidence comes in?
What the court certainly has to do is apply the rules of evidence. No question. They apply to this evidence. The court's assertion that QR, the mother, was somehow the, quote, wrong witness for this evidence is simply incorrect. She has firsthand knowledge that AR made a false report. Under Goldenstein, that is admissible as substantive evidence.
So one reading, and I'd just like to get your take on this, of what the district court did might be, okay, original ruling as far as the bathroom incident, yes, it meets the probability, I'm going to get the right phrase.
That standard.
That
yes.
Standard, yes, okay. But then when it comes to questioning QR about this, the district court, you know, it seems to me looking at the transcripts at one point says, so I'm concerned about whether or not there's an adequate showing that a review of tapes or other incident happened at school. It seems to me you could read that as saying he's really revisiting the reasonable probability standard there, as well as obviously addressing what he perceives as the hearsay question.
Yes, Your Honor. So that's respondent's position on appeal, and I disagree based on those same pages of transcript. So it's roughly 569 through 572. At this point, the prosecutor has explicitly asked the judge, I want you to reconsider your ruling, says that. Judge Cook doesn't say I'm reconsidering, doesn't say I'm changing, doesn't say I have determined that there is no reasonable probability of falsity, nothing that reads like a ruling. We all know we read transcripts for a living. Judges can say many things on the record that aren't rulings. Does he say he's concerned? Yes. But in fact, what he then goes on to rule is that there are multiple evidentiary problems with this evidence. Those rulings would be unnecessary had he concluded at the threshold that that evidence was inadmissible. He didn't do that because he went on to make other rulings.
But he made a determination as to the veracity of the witness and said mother was not competent because of no firsthand knowledge, hearing it through somebody else.
He did, Your Honor, and I would assert to this court that that was an abuse of discretion. The mother had firsthand knowledge that AR made a false report because she's told that by the school.
By the victim. She's told by the school. That doesn't
Correct.
Seem to be firsthand knowledge to me.
Well, I think if you think about this broadly.
I mean, firsthand knowledge would be perhaps the school.
She was on the bus or in the bathroom.
Yes.
I would assert to Your Honors, if that is the standard that we're going to apply to Goldenstein, no evidence of prior false reports is ever going to be admissible because you don't have witnesses to false reports, typically.
But you have the ability to cross-examine.
Absolutely, and the state certainly could have cross-examined QR to say, how did you learn this? Were you there? Did all the typical things prosecutors do to undermine evidence? They would have been allowed to do that. That doesn't mean Mr. Henderson doesn't get to introduce the evidence. Many of the court's concerns with the evidence go to weight, not admissibility. And the district court was not sitting as the fact finder. This is not a court trial. These are questions for the jury to assess, not the court. So as to the bathroom incident, the court was wrong in its evidentiary rulings. We know quite clearly based on Goldenstein, this notion of impeachment is just wrong. They don't have to impeach AR. That ruling is incorrect.
I think the point that Judge Werke and Judge Jessen were sort of focusing on, and which I thought you had conceded, was you're right, it's substantive evidence, but it still has to come in, and it's, I understand it still has to come in and comply with the rules of evidence as they relate to hearsay.
I agree, Your Honor.
So, and you know, I understand your position, you know, maybe nothing will come in, and you know, well, you know, it is what it is. But I still have a question, as Judge Werke did, about the bathroom incident. How does the mother have firsthand knowledge? I mean, if the school's said this happened and you weren't there, isn't that sort of classic hearsay? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I find hearsay extremely difficult to understand when I try to teach it to my high school mock trial team. But I thought that's kind of hearsay. Like, you know, we reviewed the tape of the bathroom incident, or I don't know, the bus, I'm getting confused, and this is what we said, and mother's listening. Well, isn't that hearsay?
So let me address both of those, the hearsay problem, the firsthand knowledge problem. And I would just, as a preface, even if you think that was properly excluded, we have two others,
right?
And exclusion of any of them, I would assert, even on their own, is prejudicial. So as to the hearsay, yes, hearsay rules apply to this evidence. But what the defense says is I'm not going to elicit statements, right? Hearsay only matters if we're talking about statements, one witness relating another witness's statements. What they can do is ask QR, even something as simple as, QR, are you aware that AR ever made a false statement of a sexual assault at school? Yes. They can stop there. The QR has not related hearsay. She's not related anyone's statements. Certainly, she couldn't say, AR said a boy touched her in a bathroom at school. That would be hearsay. But the defense can certainly elicit the fact of the false claim. That is what Goldenstein says.
Mom said no, right, in answer to that question?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Excuse me, I was drinking water. Mom never answered that question. She's never asked that question. She's not allowed to be asked that question.
But what you're trying to do is to impeach AR through Mom's testimony, and if you're going to do that, you have to give AR an opportunity to consider that testimony. That's our classic rules of evidence.
They're not impeaching AR. They have no interest in impeaching AR, and they don't have to under Goldenstein. All of the, everything in the record about impeachment, they're very concerned about it. None of that matters. Goldenstein says you can admit it as substantive evidence through another witness who is not AR. They don't have to give her a chance to explain it. They don't have to ask her about it. There's a lot of strategic reasons defense counsel may not want to attack this girl on the stand, and they made that choice, and they could make that choice. So QR can certainly testify, yes, I am aware of a false report. How much they may have been able to get into it otherwise, I don't know. I don't know what questions would have been asked, but she can testify to the fact of it.
So if she had said, let's say for the sake of argument, you're right. And she should have at least been able to say, yes, I'm aware of it.
Yes.
Okay, I'm aware of it. And let's say it's the one that the judge let in.
Yep, the bathroom.
First and then changes mind, the bathroom incident. And the woman says yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as I understand it then, the questioning would stop.
Potentially.
Okay. So if it potentially would stop,
mm-hmm.
then how, I mean, is that going to be the make or break for him being wrongly convicted?
Your Honor, I think the probative value of this evidence is massive. This is his whole defense, is that
Fair
essentially
enough.
she's done this before and multiple times before, made false claims against multiple different people in multiple different circumstances, reported to multiple different people. So even if you assume the questioning stopped after did she make a false report, and if I would appreciate for the sake of the hypothetical, we're saying they get to do that three times, defense counsel can then stand up in closing and say, you heard her testify this, certainly, you know, XYZ. However, you also heard from so-and-so and from so-and-so and from so-and-so that she has reported falsely in the past. You have to assume the full damaging potential of that evidence, which is the jury believes that she's made multiple prior false reports. Think of what, I'm sorry, Judge.
No, go ahead.
Just think of what the state was able to do in the absence of this evidence, which I think was intentional. A, they had the corner house interviewer testify, AR is incapable of maintaining a lie. We know that is false based on this record. And in rebuttal, the prosecutor stood up and told the jurors that to believe Mr. Henderson's defense, to essentially disbelieve AR, was equivalent to calling her a manipulative little sociopath. That is what's presented to the jury, is that's what they're doing by finding him not guilty. That is an incredibly distorted perception of reality and was unfair, and it was why he didn't get a fair trial.
Can I go to the third piece of evidence
yes.
you talked about? And I know you'll want to come back probably to the babysitter one, but the threatened to falsely report dad, that just seems like there's a step missing here. It's a threat to falsely report. It's not a false report. Can you help me understand how that meets the Goldstein standard?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. It is different, and it is a step removed. I would say this. The thrust behind Goldenstein is this sort of evidence, prior false reports of sexual assault in a sexual assault trial, goes to the complainant's credibility and goes to the veracity of the claims. I would assert, Your Honor, that even a threat of a false report has that same evidentiary weight, that you're showing that the complainant is capable, is willing, and has a propensity to make such claims. And again, if you disagree, and if that one is a little bit too attenuated, we do have two others. In some ways, the babysitter report is perhaps the most dramatic. So AR reports that a female babysitter who's a friend of the family, that AR woke up from sleeping, and this babysitter was touching her under her pants on her vagina. The babysitter is confronted, is very upset, and says that is not at all what happened. Instead, it was AR who sort of appeared in front of the babysitter and was touching herself, was masturbating in front of the babysitter. AR admits, and importantly, admits to Angela Davis that this was a lie. Angela Davis is the source, is the witness from which the defense wants to elicit this evidence at trial. So you have no firsthand knowledge problem, you have no hearsay problem. I mean, it's not excluded on those grounds. But you have none of those problems with this evidence because Angela Davis testifies, AR told me she's there. AR told me she lied. And again, after hearing this, the district court said, I believe this is a direct quote, there is no clear evidence of a false report. That is an abuse of discretion. To have heard from a caseworker who is unimpeached, who hasn't been shown to have any bias or any reason to lie about this, that somehow doesn't meet a reasonable probability of falsity is an abuse of discretion. To be clear, the state has never argued that these were true claims, that the babysitter did touch AR or that the boy in the bathroom did touch AR, nor has the state ever presented any reason that QR, AR's mother, or her caseworker would lie about this, that they would lie about her telling lies. I would assert to this court that the reasonable probability of falsity threshold was met as to the father and the babysitter threats, and that the district court's sort of assorted evidentiary rulings on the bathroom threat were an abuse of discretion. This was extremely prejudicial, and I would ask you to grant Mr. Henderson a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kelly Moeller, and I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney representing the state in this appeal. And I plan on addressing in my argument today the record, especially defense counsel's strategic decisions and the district court's findings of fact, the case law that contradicts the arguments that appellant makes in his reply brief and in argument today, and harmless error. But before I do, I want to address something that Judge Werke mentioned here, and that is this was the abuse of discretion standard, and the district court did an incredibly thorough job in this case of analyzing records during in-camera review. During the course of the proceedings, the court continued to order additional records for in-camera review. The court conducted voir dire of multiple witnesses and carefully considered the defense arguments and appellant's due process claims. Appellant has failed to show that the district court abused its discretion with its evidentiary considerations. And so it's really important here when you're looking at the four things that appellant claims now were erroneously excluded, that there's an accurate description or view of the record here. With respect to the alleged bathroom incident, appellant's offer of proof asserted that AR accused a boy of touching her breasts in the bathroom at the middle school, and that the investigation by the school indicated with surveillance video that this didn't happen. So the court, based on that information that was presented at that time during the pretrial motion phase, the court found that there was a reasonable probability that AR made a false report and found it informative and important that there was demonstrative video evidence to support falsity, and said that the defense attorney could cross-examine AR about that. When we get to trial, however, the defense attorney made a strategic decision not to cross-examine AR about that, and we know that this was a strategic decision because the defense attorney confirmed with the court.
I mean, who in his right mind would do that with the child? So on that question, so are you saying then when the judge revisited the bathroom incident issue, what was the basis for him to now conclude the opposite decision?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. So it was revisited then because appellant sought for it to be introduced through AR's mother, QR. Right. And there was some discussion by the parties outside the presence of the jury that QR's knowledge about this so-called bathroom incident was based on a phone call she received from the school. So it was her communications with the school. And the judge said, I was surprised that that's what you're relying on. I thought that there was video evidence. And in fact, during the course of the trial, the judge ordered the records from the middle school, and there were no records from the middle school to support that. And so I think opposing counsel is right in the fact that the judge at that point didn't say, I'm changing my finding on this, but I think it's fair to say, based on this record, the court implicitly found that there was no reasonable probability of falsity based on the information that it had before it.
You know what, I would agree with you. I mean, that's how, I cannot speak for my colleagues, but, you know, that's how, you know, looking at the transcript as a whole, it looks like he had changed his mind on the reasonable probability of falsity because now there's no videotape. I was wondering, counsel, if you could go straight to the babysitter issue.
Sure.
So what was the evidence to exclude that under the standard of review set out in, is it Goldenstein?
So, Your Honor, I think it's critically important here to look at what did defense counsel raise below. The argument that appellant claims now that Angela should have been allowed to testify about this incident was not raised by defense counsel below. In the 412 motion, in the offer of proof, this incident wasn't listed. Now, this was something that was known to the defense because appellant talked about it in his statement to police. So this particular incident was known, was not raised.
Okay, so we're going for the old waiver or forfeiture argument as opposed to a substantive argument. Let's say I don't agree. What's the substantive, what does the record indicate as to the district court's conclusion that the babysitter incident, you know, under the standard, you know, is out?
Sure.
It seems to me Ms. Yelk-Erickson, you know, made a compelling argument that, boy, that sounds true to me if she's saying this never happened to the caseworker.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right, and appellant's arguing now that that comes into substantive evidence, but below, defense counsel argued specifically that it wasn't for the truth of the matter asserted if appellant would be the one to testify about it. Not Angela, but appellant. But let's assume that, for the sake of argument, that this was raised at the court. And the court did really consider, I will say the court really did consider the testimony of AR about this. And the court found that there was no reasonable probability of falsity because
actually, what the district court said was there's no clear evidence. I mean, said that as part of the transcript, right, that there was a false report. And isn't that pretty different than what you just said, that there's no reasonable probability of falsity?
Well, the court said no clear evidence that AR made a false report. But the court had talked about the standard in Goldenstein at length during the course of the proceeding. So there's no reason to believe that the court somehow applied a different standard when it was looking at this versus what it had applied throughout the proceedings to the evidence that appellant actually raised and wanted to introduce. The other problem was that appellant...
Well, I mean, you know, I sort of agree with Judge Justin. At the end of the day, the judge said what the judge said, and, you know, if you're shifting the burden of proof when you shouldn't or applying the wrong standard of evidence, you know, I don't know. I mean, I might be willing to go along with the, well, if you look at the record on the whole, he really was changing his mind on the bathroom incident, but I don't know if I'd be willing to go that far and say, well, you know, he said clear evidence, but he really meant the Goldenstein standard. So, again, getting to the substantive issue, what is the record evidence to indicate that the babysitter incident, you know, didn't happen or did happen?
So, Your Honor, what the babysitter incident, how appellant described it today was what appellant himself described. So what we have from AR is her saying, not AR, excuse me, what we have from Angela, the caseworker, is her saying that AR and QR were in her office and that QR, I believe, is the one that brought this up and then said that, but it didn't happen, and that AR admitted she was lying. And that was it. That was, there was no further discussion about this. This was in the presence of QR when AR said this, and I think it's fair to say the court perhaps considered that, that no one was asking the child about this specifically. It was in the presence of her mother. And then they moved on.
Show that Angela, the way I understand it, Angela said she probably talked to AR about it one time, and this was sometime in the past, but it didn't sound conclusive that it was probably talked to her?
Your Honor, my recollection of the record was that
did Angela ever speak with the babysitter?
Angela never spoke with the babysitter, Your Honor, and I don't remember her saying that she ever spoke specifically with AR about this, other than that incident, what I just mentioned, where the mother was also present.
So other than, so Angela is saying mother made this claim, and that's the gist of the evidence that came in?
That's correct, Your Honor. So one thing I would like to say, too, here, with respect to the burden of proving falsity, the burden is on the defendant to prove a reasonable probability of falsity. And so the state doesn't have to show that these claims, you know, really did happen, the burden is on the defense to prove a reasonable probability of falsity. And appellant did not do that, in part, perhaps, because they weren't seeking to have Angela testify about this. I would like to...
And again, you know, I apologize for interrupting you.
That's your job, Your Honor. It's fine.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised how many people don't think it is. Ms. Mueller, So in the presence of the caseworker, okay, mother and daughter are there speaking to the caseworker, right? Am I wrong?
Yes.
Okay. Now tell me exactly what happened in front of the caseworker. Who's, you know, mother said what, daughter said what. I mean, what did they say to Davis, please?
Yes, Your Honor, my recollection of the record,
and
I don't, yes.
You know, that's all I can go by.
And it begins, and I have my notes here, it begins at around page 657 of the record. Angela learned about the so-called incident from QR.
QR is mom?
QR is mom.
Thank you.
Who determined it was false, and then AR admitted that whatever this is was false.
In front of Davis?
In front of Davis.
Well, I mean, and maybe I'm dense, that sounds like it would satisfy the Goldenstein standard, does it not?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the court could consider the fact that no other, from what we know, no other questions were asked of QR or AR. Was this a misunderstanding? Was this was done in front of her mother? And I think there was some, perhaps there could be concern about the fact that the child may not be forthcoming, that children
want
to please.
That sounds like fertile ground for cross-examination by the state, but I don't know if that means it doesn't come in as a, you know, preliminary matter. I mean, we have, as I understand it, the victim in this case admitting to the caseworker who testified at trial that there was a false, that she made a false report. I mean, isn't that classic come in as substantive evidence under Goldenstein?
Yeah, Your Honor.
Under the, reasonable probability of falsity. I mean, the victim is saying what I said was, I made a false report. I mean, that seems as good as it gets, does it not?
Just to clarify the record, I thought it was mother that said the victim made a false report, but the victim never said, I made a false report. Isn't that the facts in our...
Right, I think it was
so
the...
So it's only mother saying
right.
She made the false report to Angela, who says she's never talked to the babysitter, and the victim in this case has never said, I made a false report. I think we have a little bit of a confusion on the fact scenario.
I think it is. I think it came through the mother. And when we talk about false report, too, I'm not really sure what that means in this case, because I don't know that AR said, this person was abusing me, and it went forward that way, versus this babysitter, from what we know from what the defendant said, that AR was the one who was supposedly masturbating herself when the babysitter was sleeping, and if somehow the babysitter reported her, and then AR said, oh, but she did it. We don't really know what the circumstances are of the false report. I don't think that this was ever reported to the police or anything like that.
Looking at Goldenstein, and it doesn't talk about reports to the police, at least that I've seen. At least some of the language talks about prior false accusations. That's a lot less than I talk to the school, even the school or law enforcement,
yeah.
Right?
That's true, Your Honor, but I think what I'm trying to say also is there isn't really clarity around what actually the report was or the circumstances, in part, and this is another reason, it would be unfairly prejudicial to introduce this through Angela when you have never given AR a chance to explain what happened.
Well, and Angela never followed up with the victim either. She never went and said, this is what we heard, or gave her any opportunity to talk about it.
That's my recollection of the record on that, Your Honor, was that she was never given a chance. QR wasn't asked about this, so we don't know what QR's perception of this was. So now we're going to say that this child made a false accusation based on this limited information that we have of what happened in Angela's office that, again, defense didn't try to present Angela as a witness.
Help me just understand the context. I thought, but you know this record better than I do, that the judge made initial rulings where he said, yes, reasonable probability of falsity about the bathroom incident, but not on these other incidents, and there are more. So wasn't that a, you know, already at the outset, you know, he made that decision, so you didn't then think, I'm going to go in and use them?
No, Your Honor.
Cross-examine about them?
Yes, no, Your Honor, because the initial offer of proof, the 412 motion by defense, listed about 12 different things.
Right.
This was not one of those things. And even when it was discussed during the course of the proceedings, defense counsel never said, I want Angela to testify to this alleged instance. Defense wanted to ask Angela if she coordinated therapy for AR to deal with false allegations. That's what the defense wanted to do. This, because in Angela's report, it repeated false allegations over and over again. That's what the defense sought. The defense wanted this information to come in through appellant's own testimony, not through Angela's testimony. And the defense wanted it to come in really in response to something the state did on direct of defendant, and explicitly said, I don't want this, it's not for the truth of the matter asserted. So the defense didn't try to introduce this as substantive evidence. I will say, I only have a few seconds left. I will say, even if this court were to find that the district court abused its discretion with respect to this piece of evidence or any of the other claims made by appellant, the error, any error would be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. This case, not only do we have AR's testimony, we have her sister's testimony, the biological daughter of the defendant who corroborated the victim's testimony in many aspects, and the defense was able to test AR's credibility with the teacher he called to testify that she believed she
the
was
the sister never saw the abuse, right?
Right. There was no seeing of the abuse, but several of the surrounding circumstances.
I agree with you. And then, I mean, is it fair to say that in closing, the points that Ms. Elk-Erickson was saying about, you know, you'd have to believe she's a manipulative little sociopath. I mean, did the prosecutor say that in closing?
I believe so. I think she quoted the record in there.
You know, that seems to be pretty, and I apologize for going over, Judge Werke. That does seem to be pretty, that does seem to be hitting pretty hard on the theme of, you gotta believe her, she's always told the truth, and it would be, and she'd be a sociopath if she didn't. And if there's some evidence to suggest that, well, maybe that she's not a sociopath, but that she's, you know, lied in the past on sort of stuff, I don't know if I could get you all the way to harmless error.
And Your Honor, there was evidence because this is what I was saying. The teacher, Tiffany, testified on behalf of the defense that the victim, in her opinion, was not truthful. And so, and I can't remember the context of the prosecutor saying that, if it was, you know, with respect to Tiffany's testimony or not. But my point is that Tiffany really did be able to play that role for the defense in this case.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Your Honors.
I'm going to go right to the record.
On which
Angela,
issue? Are you going to be talking about, I assume, not the bathroom issue?
Babysitter.
The babysitter issue.
Angela Davis absolutely stated, AR said to her directly that she lied. I am on page 658 of the transcript. This is Angela Davis. She's not in front of the jury, right? They're voir direing her outside the jury. Court. And did AR say it was false? Angela Davis. AR admitted that it was false. Yes. So there's no question about that. AR said that was a false report. You have a reasonable probability of falsity because the reporter has just said that she made a false report. Angela Davis has firsthand knowledge of that. We have no hearsay problem. This was so thoroughly litigated. The notion that the defense somehow didn't try and call Angela Davis or ask her about false allegations is also just wrong. At pages 682 is where the ruling starts.
You know, you got me. Now, why isn't this forfeited?
Forfeited?
Yes.
It's certainly not forfeited, Your Honor. Defense moved pretrial to admit certain things, certainly, and there's a list, and this is not on the list. However, there is no, the state didn't object to some sort of, I don't know, discovery or notice violation. This comes from the state's disclosures. Again, they voir dire her outside the presence of the jury, and then they thoroughly litigate on the record whether she can testify about false allegations. There are borderline cases of waiver. This is not one of them. So we know that Angela Davis knows about the babysitter incident because AR reported it directly to Angela Davis. We know this isn't waived. And remember what we're asking you to decide here, the threshold question of whether the defense has met reasonable probability of falsity. They absolutely did. Angela Davis is her caseworker. She's got no reason to lie. The state has never suggested that she lied. We have her willing to come into court and say that AR made a false report of sexual assault, and we have the judge concluding somehow after this testimony there's no clear evidence of a false report. Interestingly enough, in that same discussion, the judge says it was arguably false. So in the same breath, says it's arguably false, but you haven't met your threshold requirement. That is an abuse of discretion.
Does the babysitter incident alone get you? Let's say, for the sake of argument, that's the only one we agree that should have come in. Does that alone get you to harmless error?
Absolutely, especially considering the standard here, which is, can this court say beyond a reasonable doubt, assuming the full damaging potential of the evidence, there is no reasonable likelihood the verdict would have been different? I don't believe you can say that. This jury had somewhat lengthy deliberations. This wasn't quick. And interestingly enough, they found him not guilty of a fifth-degree criminal sexual conduct. So this isn't a jury that comes back in 10 minutes and just thinks overwhelmingly he's guilty. The defense put on a case. They called witnesses. Interesting that respondent references Tiffany Giese. I believe if any neutral, fair-minded person reads her testimony, which was done outside the presence of the jury, there's no way you don't see that this girl has a problem with lying. I once, in my summary of her testimony, went through and numbered them. There are roughly 12, and she lies about everything. She lies about her name. She lies about her dad dying. She lies about food allergies. She lies about where she's going after school. She lies about the fact that she's been fed. Now, some of that can be chalked up to just kids being kids. But nonetheless, when you look at this record, this defense was grounded in fact. This is not a shot in the dark.
Well, in any event, the teacher is not saying, I mean, all of that is not, and she lies also about, you know, being...
No, it isn't,
abused.
Your Honor. But I think it's helpful context for this court. When the question that you're presented with is, did the defense meet a relatively low threshold, reasonable probability of falsity to get this evidence in? They absolutely did. It was an abuse of discretion to conclude otherwise, and it made his trial unfair. It allowed the state to present this false dichotomy to the jury of either you conclude that this girl is a sociopath or you have to find him guilty. There is a middle ground here. Maybe she's not a sociopath, but she's lied in the past. There is a pattern here.
So the remedy would be to reverse and remand for a new trial.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I would just highlight in closing, this is an unusual case. I've litigated this issue before. This court may have seen it before. And there are times where this sort of defense, a fabrication defense, is attempted. And there's perhaps one prior false report, and it's excluded. Or there are other cases where the defense is allowed to get some evidence in, but not other evidence. The judge excluded everything, everything. There were even more prior false reports than the three I challenged here. I think there were five. Plus, you have Tiffany Giese's testimony, which I'm not challenging, documenting her pattern of lying. This is his whole defense, which, again, is grounded in reality, is not an attempt to slander the complainant, to persuade the jury by illegitimate means. This is his true and real defense, and the entirety of it is excluded, which resulted in him getting an unfair trial. I would ask you to grant Mr. Henderson a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for appearing and arguing in support of your briefs. The matters are taken under advisement, and the decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.